from KQED. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Mina Kim, in for Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum, Stanford professor and former U.S. ambassador to Russia, Michael McFaul, learned that during the Helsinki meeting, Russian President Vladimir Putin asked President Trump to let Russian prosecutors interrogate McFaul, and that Trump may be open to it. McFaul joins us to respond to the news. Then at 9:30, if you're spending what seems like your whole day at the DMV for routine transactions, you're not alone. DMV offices are seeing a surge in visitors as some 23 million Californians over the next few years are expected to apply for a real ID. We look at what the agency is doing about the wait times. Join us. Welcome to Forum. I'm Mina Kim, sitting in today for Michael Krasny. Stanford professor and former U.S. ambassador to Russia, Michael McFaul, is now part of the firestorm over President Trump's Helsinki meeting with Russian President Vladimir Putin. White House Press Secretary Sarah Sanders confirmed yesterday that Putin asked Trump to have Russian prosecutors question McFaul in exchange for special counsel Robert Mueller's team being allowed to attend the questioning of the 12 Russian intelligence officers that Mueller indicted last week. According to Sarah Sanders, Trump thought it was, quote, an interesting idea, though he didn't commit to anything. We get your reaction to this and to the ongoing confusion over whether Trump believes Russia is continuing to target the U.S., as intelligence officials say. Joining us now is Philip Bump. He's a national correspondent at The Washington Post. Good morning, Philip Bump.
Good morning.
We're also joined by Michael McFaul. He is director of the Freeman Spokley Institute for International Studies at Stanford University. Michael McFaul, thanks for talking with us as well.
Thanks for having me.
What went through your mind when you learned that Putin had made this request to question you and that Trump had not rejected it outright? Michael McFaul?
Well, yeah, I'm just trying to think how to answer. So I was actually in Helsinki and listened to the press conference. And when President Putin went on about Bill Browder and the several alleged confederates in the conspiracy to launder this money, and then mentioned this this MLAT treaty, as wouldn't this be a good thing for us to do? And he didn't say that. Actually, President Trump said that, and he thought that was a great idea. I thought that was a horrific idea at that moment, because it was equating the indictment that Mr. Mueller had done with some cockamamie scheme that the President Putin had spun up and literally was talking about to the whole world at that press conference. It was only 24 hours later that I learned that those several officials he was referring to, that I was on that list. And that made me even more troubled that he was, you know, let's be clear, Vladimir Putin is suggesting that I and several of the other people listed there were part of a conspiracy. And the fact that our president didn't understand that, obviously it was discussed, as we've now learned, and didn't reject it at the time, but embraced it as a great idea, was deeply disappointing. But I give President Trump the benefit of the doubt, because maybe he didn't understand what was being discussed. These are details that Putin knows well, and he probably doesn't even know who Bill Browder is or the Magnitsky Act. But to then have the chance to correct the record at the White House 48 hours later, and they chose not to do so, that's just bad policy. It's just, you know, it's not about me personally. It just makes our president look weak or uninformed about what, of course, is a ridiculous idea that would never happen in the, it won't happen in the real world, but that he didn't reject it. You know, I just think it was a mistake, and I hope maybe today they'll correct that record.
Well, let's let our listeners, remind our listeners where they have left this. This is Sarah Sanders responding to, White House Press Secretary Sarah Sanders responding to a question from New York Times' Maggie Haberman.
Is that a topic that came up in their conversation? Did President Putin raise this with President Trump?
There was some conversation about it, but there wasn't a commitment made on behalf of the United States, and the president will work with his team, and we'll let you know if there's an announcement on that front.
The president will work with his team. I guess the question I have around that, you're saying that you give the president the benefit of the doubt. Is it because this would be completely impossible, really, for the U.S. government to do? I mean, how would they actually, if for some reason the White House entertained this request by Russia, get a non-federal employee who is not charged with a crime or there's no evidence of wrongdoing, you know, forced into questioning by Russian prosecutors?
Well, that's never going to happen. I mean, just to be clear, I think the chance of that happen is next to zero. I could go through the details if you want about how MLAT treaties work, but the Russians would have to make a formal request to the Department of Justice to seek these investigative interviews. Then the Department of Justice would have to agree. Then, you know, they'd have to go to a judge, and that judge would have to review it. We do have rule of law in America, after all.
Yes.
The president of the United States just can't summons me to be beholden to an autocratic regime. I want to underscore, there is no rule of law in Russia, and this is a very typical Putin scheme to deal with his critics at home and some of them abroad. The fact that he's chosen to go after me now, a former U.S. official, that escalates it entirely. So that can't happen. But there's a bigger principle here that I want people to understand. This is called whataboutism. It's a very typical Russian propaganda disinformation tactic where we say, you know, you invaded and annexed Crimea and invaded Ukraine. And they say, well, what about Serbia, right? Well, here it is again. We have now indicted 12 Russian intelligence officers with tons of evidence to support that indictment. And so Vladimir Putin came to Helsinki to provide a whataboutism. Well, what about Bill Browder, who, by the way, is a UK citizen, minor fact, but and this crazy scheme that he talked about at the press conference of money laundering that then the U.S. government officials helped to do. And then, gave $400 million of it to the Clinton campaign.
Right,
which
you later
corrected the record,
yes,
to say it was $400,000. But to in any way engage in a seriousness about it, that's why I hesitated when you asked me, well, how would it work? Just by entertaining the idea that it might work gives it credibility that it does not deserve and needs to be pushed back into a box. And by the president of the United States, he needs to be the one to push it back into that box.
And go further with that, Michael McFaul. What's the damage that occurs when the president fails to condemn a request like this outright? I mean, is the ripple effect felt among other diplomats who are working in other nations, especially adversarial ones? What's the damage?
Well, I think it's a damage to the president's credibility, first and foremost. He looks like he doesn't understand basics about diplomacy. And your listeners should know that there is just ridicule filled through the Russian newspapers and Twitter right now about the Helsinki summit. They're making fun of our president, number one. Number two, yeah, it makes people nervous. It makes me nervous about traveling. Russia has a history of abusing Interpol and requesting people to be stopped, and now I'm a target of that. And so I would like my president to defend me. And I'm sure the other officials that were on that list feel the same way. That's in a very practical way. I have to now worry about that. And then third, I've heard from lots of diplomats. This is a nervousness. Our president doesn't support us. It's not that different from what we were talking about in Helsinki, where he just threw the intelligence community under the bus, standing next to Putin. Well, now he's thrown under the bus me and former government officials. By the way, Republicans as well. It's not a partisan thing that we're in that list. And that sends a signal of weakness. And I just hope they'll correct the record today.
Michael McFaul, I know you can only be with us until 9:20, so I want to open the phone lines in case our listeners want to ask you questions. The number to call is 866-733-6786. Again, 866-733-6786. You can post your comments on our website, kqed.org/forum. On Facebook, you can tweet us at KQED Forum or email us your questions at forum@kqed.org. Philip Bump of The Washington Post. I mean, what have been the expected response from a White House administration? And do you agree with McFaul's assessment as to what the effect of Trump's, you know, the fact that he is still meeting with his team, has not yet made a statement about this particular request from Putin in terms of the effect it has?
Yes. I mean, I think that the ambassador was right across the board there. And I think that we see the expected reaction in comment, for example, from State Department spokesperson Heather Nauert, who called this essentially ridiculous, the request. She didn't get out ahead of the White House in rejecting what had been offered by President Putin, but she gave the sort of response that you would expect, which is, to the ambassador's point, that this puts at risk a lot of diplomats who work with the United States if all of a sudden it is the case that the president might work with Russia to hand over people that are political targets of Russia. And I think the ambassador is also right when he says that the president may not really understand what's being discussed here. When you look at what he said, he addressed it briefly during the press conference with President Putin. He addressed it also briefly during his interview with Sean Hannity on Fox News this week. And in both cases, he seemed to sort of embrace the first half of it. The first half of it is that Russia might get a chance to interview or that Russia might actually welcome Special Counsel Robert Mueller's investigators to Russia to sit in on an interview of the 12 suspected intelligence agents who are alleged to have hacked the DNC. That aspect of it, because it put some pressure on the Mueller team and sort of opened up this idea of an investigation into the investigation, Trump was enthusiastic about, perhaps not recognizing the other half of it, which is that Putin says, as a sort of quid pro quo for that, he would then get to interrogate these American officials.
Well, Ben writes, and this is for you, Michael McFaul, are you fearful for your life?
No, I'm not fearful for my life, although I did face death threats when I was the ambassador. Actually, I wrote a whole book about this harassment that I faced, just so people can understand the nature of this regime. And, that's part of why Vladimir Putin doesn't like me, because I know how this system works, and I write about it, and I call it out for what it is. I am, worried, as I said before, about this Interpol abuse, which has happened in the past. That's why Mr. Browder's book is called, the title of it is Red Notice, because that's what it is in the Interpol system, that they chase him all over the world. The other thing I would just underscore is this point that, well, maybe the president didn't understand, and okay, I'm going to accept that. I mean, I think that's bad advice from his team that they let him go into that meeting for 2 hours, and we only know a little bit. We know about that they discussed me. We don't know about all the other things they discussed. But the second thing is, okay, you got it wrong then, but now you have to get it right. And I'm glad the State Department spokesperson, that was dead right. That was fantastic what she said. And by the way, I've had lots of Democrats and Republicans reach out to me personally and on various media places supporting us. But there was one phrase at that State Department briefing that was really disturbing for me when she said, "I can't speak for the White House." What is that? Hold on. You're all part of the same government, my friends. I worked at the White House for 3 years. Never, ever did we have one part of the government saying one thing and then saying, well, I don't speak for the White House. They have got to have one message, and I hope it's the message that the State Department put out. But it needs to be now under the voice of the President of the United States, given so much ambiguity that has been thrown out there about what happened in Helsinki and what he meant to say, what he didn't meant to say. He's got to clear up the record. It has to be him.
Yes, the statement you're referring to by State Department spokeswoman Heather Nauert is, well, I can't answer on behalf of the White House, but what I can tell you is that the overall assertions that have come out of the Russian government are absolutely absurd. Before I let you go, Michael McFaul, I just want to get your reaction to what Putin said this morning to a group of ambassadors in Moscow. He said forces in the U.S. that are easily ready. There are forces in the U.S. that are easily ready to sacrifice Russian-American relations for their own ambitions. Is this a message that is really directed at our president to try to keep him focused on their relationship as opposed to, you know, protecting his own nation?
Yes. I mean, those forces, when he says that, he means people like me, just so you understand. That's exactly what he means. For whatever reason, he's been obsessed with me for a long time, and he continues to be so. Like, why? How my name was thrown into that list, by the way, makes no rhyme or reason whatsoever. It's because of his personal obsession with me. But it's also a way, and I can just imagine the conversation, because I've been to several summits with Vladimir Putin, and he's a good storyteller. He knows how to spin a good narrative. He knows how to invent facts to create drama. And, you know, he came ready to lay this story down. And the basic story is you and I, we're trying to do the right thing. And the fake news and the deep state, they're all trying to get in our way. And that was the message he was trying to send in those comments today.
Former U.S. Ambassador to Russia, Michael McFaul, also a Stanford University professor and director of the Freeman Spogli Institute for International Studies. His new book is From Cold War to Hot Peace. Thanks again for talking with us this morning.
Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. We have Philip Bump with us still, national correspondent at The Washington Post. And Philip, I'd like you to respond to this question from Lonnie in Livermore. Hi, Lonnie.
Good morning.
Good morning. Go ahead.
I just wanted to pass along comments that our family completely supports Ambassador McFaul, and we're a good fan of his. In fact, before this conference ever happened, we couldn't understand why on earth he was allowed, he, our president, to go in there alone because of the damage that could be done to him by having it in secret and no witnesses. And I never in my life figured that he would come out of that conference and Ambassador McFaul would be targeted. In fact, I had written to our senators and our local representative suggesting that Ambassador McFaul go in with Donald Trump so that he would have someone there to have his back. And now Ambassador McFaul is a victim. So sort of my question for the Washington Post, do you think the media response and those of us who are following these stories, did we put up enough fuss before this conference ever happened, especially with regard to the results of the South Korea and North Korea fiasco?
Lonnie thinks. Philip Bump?
I would tie that question into this whole issue of the State Department response. And what I mean by that is that there is a president of the United States who generally or in quite frequently is at odds with the administration that he's supposed to represent. And so when the State Department says, as an unusual statement, you know, we can't speak for the White House, it's actually true here. They can't speak for Donald Trump because Donald Trump may change his view on something at a moment's notice. We've all seen this happen. And so the administration and our allies overseas and lots of observers see this as two separate things, the United States government and the President of the United States. And so when I see that, yes, there was pressure that was being put on the president by members of Congress. There was, I'm sure, internal pressure from people within the administration. But Trump does what he wants to do, and the way that our government works is that there are lots of ways in which he's empowered to do that. And so there wasn't a whole lot that could be done. There were CNN had some good reporting on why he did it that way, and some of the reasons that he wanted to meet one-on-one with Putin. One was that he didn't want there to be a record of what had been said. Another was that he didn't want people in the room who were aides who would push a harder line on Russia. And then the third was he wanted to get to know him on a personal level. So those were the rationales that he offered to his team. And at the end of the day, there wasn't much that his team could do to prevent this one-on-one meeting from taking place.
Well, Philip Bump, some Democrats are trying to subpoena the interpreter at the meeting, Marina Gross. Right. Is there precedent for that? I mean, what is the likelihood that that request could even be considered?
Well, the likelihood was always low, you know, largely because the Democrats are in the minority. It was sort of interesting, though, that Senator Bob Corker from Tennessee, who's a Republican who's also retiring, actually entertained that as an idea. I mean, you know, this is not something that I think in any other circumstance, any other presidency would have been entertained. It is a very unusual request. But that people on both sides of the aisle see as confusing and underrepresented what actually happened in those 2 hours where Putin and Trump were by themselves. The Washington Post had a story yesterday about how American agencies are scrambling to try and figure out what the actual commitments were that were made in that meeting. It sets up an unusual and probably unprecedented circumstance, but it's not clear what the solution is to actually learning what happened.
Well, let's hear from Laura in El Cerrito. Hi, Laura.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. Hi, Philip. I have a question that I thought of when Mr. McFaul was speaking. And I'm an MSNBC watcher, so I think I'm up to speed, and I've read all the books that are out there on what's been going on the last 2 years. But the one nagging concern that I have is why people keep giving Donald Trump the benefit of the doubt, number one, and then even following this sort of egregious performance, quote unquote, as he calls it, in Russia. At what point is it truly the case that Republicans are still giving him the benefit of the doubt and supporting him? Or is something else happening behind the scenes?
You mean the benefit of the doubt in terms of just everything that he does? Or do you mean in terms of him saying that he trusts the intelligence agencies when they say that Russia hasn't meddled, which has been the latest?
Right. So sort of on several fronts, does he do benefit of the doubt that he really does trust the intelligence agencies, or that he's not really conspiring with Russia? So, I mean, that's been my kind of thought for a while.
Yes, and Philip,
thank you. It's not normal. And
Laura, thank you. And Philip Bump, of course, the latest being that when a reporter asked, is Russia still targeting the U.S., Trump responded, no. And she said, no, you don't believe that to be the case. And he said, no. Again, but then the White House a few hours later says that Trump was saying no to whether he would take further questions from reporters at all. I mean, where does that leave us?
So I would say that I think most rational, objective observers understand that President Trump is well aware of what Russia did in 2016 and has chosen to deny it publicly. But what's underpinning all of this is partisan politics. And the Republican base is extremely enthusiastic about President Trump, in part because of his policies and in part because of his unusual willingness to be rude to his political opponents. Republicans stand with him, and that puts Republican politicians in a tricky spot from the standpoint that they have a lot of people who voted them into office who really, really like Donald Trump. And so they are not willing to go out on a limb and say, hey, Donald Trump did X, Y, and Z bad because they fear being punished for it. Senator Jeff Flake from Arizona, for example, isn't seeking re-election because his base turned on him because he was a critic of President Trump, among other things.
Meantime,
so with that context, we get into a position where senators, you know, President Trump's statement on Tuesday in which he tried to walk back his comments about standing with Putin over the intelligence agencies, or at least equating the two, it was a totally ridiculous statement that did nothing to undercut all the other evidence that he presented on Monday that he said made a question as to whether or not Russia had interfered in the election. But there were senators who needed to have the political space to be able to say, okay, Trump has changed his mind. They need to be able to both pay lip service to the obvious reality that Russia did interfere and at the same time placate their base by saying that they still agree with President Trump.
Well,
and so that's what they did. And so that's broadly the situation in which we find ourselves.
Well, Philip Bump, national correspondent at The Washington Post, thanks for joining us. And thanks also to Michael McFaul, who joined us earlier. I'm Mina Kim, another half-hour forum up next.